gets me every time.
That's the best show.
That's
watching us get up.
Good morning. I did not introduce myself earlier at the children's message, but my name is Heather. For those who do not know, I'm the director of children's ministry and co-director of youth ministry as well here at Sterling UMC. And welcome to everybody who's here. Today, Sharon and I have the opportunity to have a conversation with each other and also with you all, just like we did with the children earlier about rituals, what they mean to us, what they can mean. Maybe, you know, they can be very personal. They can bring us joy. They can bring us sadness, whatever those rituals are. So did you want to talk a little more about rituals?
Yeah. So, you know, I thought it might be a good idea first to just kind of define what a ritual actually is. There is, you know, I think a very fine line between what is a ritual, what is a routine, what is a habit, what is a
tradition,
yeah. And you heard that, like, with the kids, right? Like, there was everything from, like, you know, a ritual, you know, what you or I might associate with a ritual to just, I go to school, which is, you know, of course, a very, like, regimented thing and, you know, something that all kids would do. So I looked up what the actual definition of ritual was, and there were a number of them, but a ceremony consisting of a series of actions performed according to a prescribed order, a transition marking the space between seasons of life, or a series of actions invariably followed by someone. I thought about, I saw one thing that said, if you wake up in the morning and you take a shower and then brush your teeth and you would be okay with doing it the opposite order, then that's just a routine. If you are not okay with doing it in the opposite order, then congratulations, you have a ritual.
That's very interesting.
That's, you know, cool. And in general, like, if you feel like you don't, you're a person without rituals, I would ask, how did 2020 go for you? I think, you know, the time that we spent in the pandemic gave a lot of us an idea of what we actually were tied to. So I started thinking about it, and, you know, the prevailing thought is that what makes something a ritual is what you put behind it, the intention that you're putting into it while you do it. You know, for example, I know some people have a skincare ritual. I have a skincare routine, but I have a coffee ritual. So, you know, we all have our things, and knowing what that is for you. So for me, I started thinking about the absolutely astronomical amount of pictures that I have on my phone. It's alarming. It would not be hyperbole to say tens of thousands. And those are all moments. They were moments that were important to me when I took them. I love having them. I would call those the habits of my life, but the ones that I put on my wall, the ones that I frame and, like, put in the hallway or in the stairwell or on my desk, those are what I would call my rituals. You know, the ritual is the frame. The ritual is that thing that says, hey, look at this. I want to repeat this. I want to do this over and over again because it means something to me. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
How many pictures are on your phone?
I don't want to say. A lot. If you ask my kids, way too many. I think not enough, but, you know.
All these wonderful moments. So we thought we would start off by talking about the thing that is the most obvious because we're all doing it right now. I mean, we're still kind of in, like, a freeze frame Christmas Eve here in the sanctuary. Christmas rituals, holiday rituals that, you know, we're very particular about those in our lives. We tend to be. Those tend to be things we don't want to change unless we absolutely have to and have big feelings about it if somebody feels a ritual should be going a different way. So, Heather, what kind of holiday rituals do you guys have in your house?
So when I was thinking about this, I was like, I mean, we just get together and we're family. We just do things as a family, right? But then I was thinking about it, and so growing up, I did not grow up United Methodist. I went to church on Christmas morning. So Christmas Eve was our big family time. So we all got together at my grandparents' house. We had a meal. Usually they ordered subs from Subway, and we had, like, a big sub meal and fruit and whatever, and then some kind of ice cream and pie dessert. And then we would exchange gifts, and we would have this thing called a grab bag, and my grandparents would open all their gifts. And then as time went on, that evolved more and more. And I think one of my biggest memories was the grab bag growing up. And that really hit home during COVID because, I cry in moments of public speaking, so I apologize. and it really hit home during COVID because when it came to Christmas time and my family, we could not get together on Christmas Eve. And we were like, how can we hold on to that? What do we need to do? So we created a Zoom call. We still did a little bit of a gift exchange with the kids. It was a little more difficult. There was a lot of leave it on the front porch and someone go pick it up and leave it at my parents' front porch and they go pick it. It was a lot of front porching, there's a lot of drive arounds just to get these little kids' gifts exchanged, but it meant a lot to them, you know. But it was nice for me to get on and still see each other on Zoom. But the one thing that we still kept through all of COVID was that grab bag. So the grab bag is just, I should have brought it with me. It's just, ours is just a big stocking, like a big, I don't know, 3.5 foot stocking. And you just get little gifts. And so my grandmother started it by just picking up like a pack of gum at the grocery store, an extra candy bar while she was out at the gas station, you know, just something small, a little chapstick, a little toy car she saw that she thought someone would like, those free calendars you get in the mail. And they would just get wrapped and they'd be put in the grab bag. So it wasn't a big value gift, but it was something that no matter how young you were, whether you were just a newborn, 1.5 months old, like my son was one Christmas, or my parents, you know, the oldest of old, my parents, you know, when you're little, that's who that is. And my grandparents just facilitated it. And they just sat back and they just enjoyed watching it. And so we would all go around and we would take turns from the youngest to oldest picking out these grab bag gifts. And at the end, you could exchange and there were rules and flying paper everywhere and things being thrown across the room to exchange them. And it was ridiculous. And that went from like maybe 15 people to now, I mean, on Christmas Eve, we had almost 30 people in my parents' house. And, you know, and as my grandparents passed away, it got moved to my parents' house. And now there's almost 30 of us. And so it's amazing to see. And we still do it. And now my parents sit back and watch the chaos unfold and just laugh as somebody tries to put a little organization to it. But during COVID, when we couldn't do that, my mom went out and bought each of my sisters and I our own large stocking. And she put a few gifts in there, and then we went out and we filled it the rest of the way for our families. And that way we could still do the grab bag with our own families, and it stayed with us. And now we're back to doing it again in the whole big chaos moment. And so that's really, and if we hadn't had that, I don't know if Christmas would have meant as much to me. I mean, it would have always, it always means a lot, but it was something that really grounded me in my family and in what we do as the Olton family.
And it's part of how you know it was a ritual is that when you encountered something that threatened to change up the order of it, you didn't let it go.
Right. We found a way around it. We changed it. We adapted it. And so like last Christmas, when we were back to all in person, it was like the night before Christmas Eve. And my middle son goes, so we're doing the grab bag at Nanny and Poppy's. I'm like, yep, we're doing the grab bag at Nanny and Poppy's. And when are we doing ours? And I went, ours? Oh, we're still doing one. Okay, great.
Guys, we have a new ritual.
So I ran to Five Below, and suddenly the ritual has expanded. So now we do our own little grab bag on Christmas morning, and we do the big one with the whole family on Christmas Eve. But I think it's important that when you think of a ritual, you think about how it can change, how it can adapt. Is it really, we had the same thing for dinner every year when my grandparents hosted. And that, if you had asked me then, would have been part of our ritual. We found during COVID that wasn't that important. It didn't matter what we had to eat. It doesn't matter. You know, we had meat and cheese platters this year and some fresh fruit, and that was it. And it was fine. It was good. It was wonderful. We were all together, and that's what mattered. but that grab bag, so it is chaos. I highly recommend it. It's a lot of fun.
This is also a good day for ritual shopping. Like if you feel like your family doesn't have enough things that like they're passionate about today, maybe you can find a new one. We'd like to ask, what are some of your holiday rituals? So the survey that's been going on has some of the stuff that's been written on there, and I am not in any kind of position to read it, as it turns out. But
on Christmas Day.
Oh, Chinese food. That's a good one.
Making a vision board.
Caroling. Oh, my gosh. Does anyone remember when we used to go caroling? Oh, boy. Those were chaos, but fun. Going to Christmas Eve services. Absolutely. That's definitely in there.
With family and taking time to reflect. Oh, it's bigger. On how far we have come throughout the year and what we are thankful for. Yeah.
Yeah, those are wonderful. Does anybody want to share here in the sanctuary? Does anybody want to elaborate on any of their Christmas rituals? Does anybody have a kind of an unusual one or just an incredibly usual one? There's Andy. Andy's going to break the ice for us. Andy's parents are sitting right next to him, and they both have that look on their face like, what's he going to say?
So this year, Christmas was a little, in my eyes, it was a little different for me because I recently moved to West Virginia. So about an hour drive. So I was thinking, I was like, man, how are we going to do Christmas this year? So of course I work till midnight, Sunday through Thursday. So I said, I asked my mom, I was like, can I sleep on your couch that night?
Oh.
And that way we woke up and every Christmas morning we have, cinnamon rolls. We wake up, she makes cinnamon rolls and we spend time as a family and then we open presents. So I was glad that we could do that this year. We had the ability to. And yeah, that's my Christmas ritual.
I love that.
Yes. Nothing beats a good Christmas morning breakfast ritual. I say dessert because ours is pinch bread, which is like a monkey bread. So it's like a dessert.
Raise your hand if you have rituals around food in the holiday season. Yeah. I love that. Raise your hand if you have rituals around gathering together with family. How about travel? Does anyone have any rituals around travel? Never. A couple, yeah. I mean, we used to travel for Thanksgiving, and we had the ritual of the packing and the occasional arguing and all of that, all of the stuff that goes along with travel. But I think it's all kind of part of the process. Does anybody else? Okay. That's fine. You know, thank you for taking the survey. That will be available, and we'll have that, maybe put that on social media or something later. But just look at all of those. Like, and a lot of them are about spending time with family. A lot of them are about the things that we do together. So, you know, I was in preparing to kind of talk about this in church. One of the things that I started looking around was just how rituals affect us outside of the church. Because if it's something that we're going to do in the church that's going to be meaningful to us, like there's a reason for that. Like there's a behavioral component to that. And I found a study in the Harvard Business Review that was talking about, you know, they asked people about rituals that were important to them. And the kinds of things that they did to ground themselves. And I was shocked at how many of those were communal rituals versus how many were personal rituals. Like, do you want to guess at what percent was communal?
Oh. 60%?
10%. So behaviorally, you know, we rely about 10% on rituals that are like this. And the rest are the rituals that we make for ourselves. And I think a lot of that is also because while we might be together, everybody in this room could be experiencing the ritual of church in a private way. I was thinking, as many of you know, my son Danny is autistic. And so rituals mean a lot to us in our life. Rituals, especially when he was a baby, ran our life. And I call them rituals now, and that's intentional because I at first would call them habits, compulsions, routines, and all of those words didn't actually fit what he was doing. you know, I have a habit involving, you know, candy, or I have a habit involving social media. I have a bad habit involving social media. But that was not what he was doing. What he was doing was grounding himself in various situations that we were in. You know, we could go to, I kind of have a core memory of taking him to the zoo, and it was a zoo that he had never been to before, and he was completely stymied and still and did not know what to do with himself until he made a routine for himself. Like, he started a ritual where he would like walk from one place to another and then to another, and he created something familiar in a place that was unfamiliar. And once he had established that for himself, he was able to join us and be a part of the activity that we were doing. And as we went through the day, when he would get overstimulated or when he would feel as though, you know, he was really out of control, he would return to that ritual that he had created for himself and kind of just get himself back together. That same Harvard Business Review study that I found, they were talking about how they had performed a various amount of social experiments regarding rituals. And they found that people, and I'm sure this won't be shocking to you, that people that associated a ritual with loss, with their grief, felt better sooner than people who did not. And it didn't, in some cases, those were church rituals. In some cases, they were just rituals that they had made for themselves. Like the grief of a lost relationship, it made that person feel better. They wrote down all of like the favorite things of their significant other before they broke up, and then tore them up and burned them in the flame or something like that. And which sounds, you know, a little intense, but that person felt better. There was another story of a woman who, in the years following her husband's death, washed his car at the same time on Sunday afternoons that he did when he was alive, and that ritual brought her closer to him. And they, you know, because when you're doing a study, you can't necessarily inflict grief upon somebody. They derived this social experiment where they offered people $200 to come in and take a really lengthy survey, just something that nobody would actually really want to do. And they said, you know, if you come in and do this, we will randomly select somebody to win $200. And so they all came in, and I think they thought that maybe that gift would happen at the end of the service, but at the end of their time, but it happened in the beginning. And they, so right away, pulled somebody's name out of a hat, said, you get $200. Heather gets $200. She gets to leave and go home, and everybody else here has to stay here and deal with these surveys. And they were understandably distressed. And about half of them, they just told them to go on about it and just finish the surveys and go home. And the other half, they led them through a ritual where they drew a picture of their feelings. These are college students, Harvard college students, by the way. They drew a picture of their feelings. And then they tore it up into little pieces of paper, and they sprinkled it with salt, and they threw it away. And at the end of the experiment, the people that had done that felt much better than the people who hadn't. Maybe it was just fun to do that. But whatever it was, the leading them through that ritual helped them deal with the loss of that $200. Like, they were generally not even concerned about it, whereas the people who had just gone on to take the surveys were still pretty bitter about how they had spent their day.
That's like sometimes when I get like really stuck in a feeling, I'll just sit down and just jot down words. I'll just write words. I don't have to do anything with it. I just write it down like in my little journal, and then I never look at the page again, but then I feel like I can just... I can then express that feeling and move on. That's mm-hmm. So it's very similar to
like a writing ritual. Mm-hmm. Salt. You need to add salt. That's the problem. Obviously, season your feelings, my friends, and that's the answer to everything. But I just, you know, I found that really interesting, because I think sometimes we know what it is that will make us feel better, but we still don't do it. You know, in the case of, you know, the $200 and that loss, you know, these are simple things. You know, these are little rituals that we can do. It can be as simple as, like, for me, coffee. I'm not kidding. That is a ritual thing. And I celebrate a ritual of coffee at various times of my life, in as simple as didn't get enough sleep. You know, before work, I'm going to have my coffee. Before church, I'm going to have my coffee. But even as dramatic as, you know, I remember a couple of times every time, but when I had my first miscarriage, I remember thinking, I can have coffee now. And I did my coffee ritual and I felt better. I know Willis a couple of times was like, really, coffee, that's what we're doing? And I was like, yes, coffee is what we're doing.
It helps.
Don't question the rituals that your soul needs. It's trying to tell you something important, right? What's your silliest ritual?
Oh, I don't know. My husband would probably be better one to answer that.
He's deeply afraid.
So I love to read, and I don't know how. I've noticed it over the last year. Before I sit down to read a book, I start at least three of them beforehand. Like, I'll pick it up and like I'll read a chapter or two, and then I put it down, and then I pick up another one, I never go back. I eventually go back to those original ones, but it seems so silly to me when I think about it. I'm like, why do I, like, I'm like, I really want to read this book. And I go, nah, not right now. And then I pick up another one, and nah, not right now. And I go through like three of them. And then like that fourth one that I pick up is like, yeah, this one, this is the one. If I had picked it up first, maybe it would have been the one. I don't know. Maybe it's just never quite the right time, but I'll eventually go back to those other ones. But it's weird how that, like, for some reason, it's like my brain needs to like get a little jump start to sit down and actually get ready to focus on a book, I guess.
For sure. I think, you know, one of the things that we used to talk about a lot with Danny, you hear this phrase a lot in early childhood development, and that is the function of the behavior. It's a nice way of saying, what the heck? Why are you doing that? Please stop. But if you ask yourself, what is the function of this behavior? You feel a lot more like, you know, regulated. But we used to ask that question with Danny a lot because, you know, when you can't do anything about a behavior until you know why it's happening. So if you're looking at the rituals that you do, you may not be trying to stop them, but, you're asking yourself, why am I doing this? What is this helping me do? And sometimes that helps, like Heather was talking about in seasons, like in COVID, where you have to change it. So you have to say to yourself, what was that ritual doing for me and how can I replicate it in some way? So what you see up on the screen now is the question of what church rituals are the most important to you. And I can see that some people have already started to write on that, and that's wonderful. That's at the same link that we were on before. One of the things I think is really interesting about church rituals is that there's a bunch of them, right? Like just off the top of your head, you could like list a number of them. If you ask the ones that are people feel the most important about, I've been a church kid since my whole life. And there are people that are very like, oh, why are we doing communion again every week? And then there's people that are like, why would we only do it once a week? Why couldn't we do it twice a week? You know, there are people, certain hymns, oh my goodness, the hymns are such a powerful thing. Like, just, you don't have to tell me what they are, but raise your hand if you love every piece of music that we do in church on Sunday. Oh, Rick, I love you, man. Yes. For those of you that raised your hand, how do the kids do it? There we go. I don't know. Whatever. I'm old, so you get the old-fashioned heart. I heart you if you love all of the music we do. But it's probably not super likely that everybody does. I can't admit to loving all of the music that we do in church. So, you know, people have very strong feelings about those kinds of things because they're a ritual of their faith. They're a way that they meet Jesus. So just really quickly, does anybody want to share a ritual, a church ritual, or a faith ritual that is important to them? Or just want to go with Beth?
Communion is important to me because when my husband was nearing the end of his life, communion was important to him. Mm-hmm. And every Sunday, even when he had trouble walking, we would come down and take communion. And now when I do it, it helps me remember him. So.
Amen. I remember that. I feel like I've been thinking about Steve a lot this morning. I was thinking he'd have a much better idea of what to say. Is anybody else? Oh, Katie, Debbie. Get the steps in.
I've been a member of a lot of churches in my life, but whenever I get a chance to either sing in a choir or sing in a worship team, it grounds me because that's what I did growing up. Like I would sit next to my grandma and she taught me how to sing. Like I feel like she taught me how to sing before I knew how to talk. And it connects me to her when I'm singing because I know that she would be so proud of what I'm doing. So definitely singing.
Oh, I love that. That's a powerful one for me too. So, you know, I think that sometimes, you know, I feel like people are kind of anti-ritual right now. Like, I think that maybe we kind of came out of COVID with an idea that like an independence. I feel like especially, you know, in my generation, in younger generations, there's this idea that's like, why do I need to go to church? You know, I'm a faithful person. I can sit and I can read my Bible someplace else. I feel close to God, or I'm unhappy with what my church is doing. And you know, that's valid. And I think that if you are unhappy, you know, I think that if actively doing something makes you unhappy, that's a sign that you should not do it.
Absolutely.
You know, period, the end, full stop. I don't think that God ever had in mind for us to be burdened by the rituals of faith. But, you know, what I have found for me is that rituals stand in the gap for me between my weariness and my faith. You know, when I don't know what else to do with myself, rituals help me figure it out. If I don't know what to pray, I have always got the Lord's Prayer. If I don't know how to act, you know, I can come to church and I can be reminded of this community, of the larger faith community that I'm a part of, you know, of the liturgies that I'm a part of that have been a part of our existence for far, far, far beyond us, that and will live way beyond us, you know. I think that that's really key. And they, you know, ritual gets a bad rap, but it's there for us. And it's something that we can always root ourselves in. So that's the name of this particular Sunday is we root ourselves in ritual. It's a whole sentence. How does a weary soul rejoice? We root ourselves in ritual. And it doesn't say we encase ourselves in ritual. It doesn't say I stick my feet into and I change nothing. I'm on a ritual. But it does say I go back to those basic things of my faith, those basic early liturgical hugs that I remember from being a child, from growing up in confirmation class, or from, you know, if faith is something that came to you late, you know, what were those first feelings of connection and belonging? You know, it's rituals take you back there in a way that lets you build the muscle memory of your faith. So just in closing of this part of our service, I wanted to read you a poem that is actually in the devotional books for our Advent series. And it's actually called Muscle Memory. And the more I read it, the more I thought, I don't want to project it. I just want you to hear it and just think about what it is in the life of the church that fills this role for you. When the world falls apart around me, when the rug is pulled, when the house is on fire, when all I can do is swallow the cry in my throat, take me to the table. Tell me how people have fed each other. Tell me how they've torn the bread with wrinkled hands and children's hands. And tell me how they've said, this love is for you. They looked you in the eye. Then take me to the font, float my hands in the pool, let me feel weightless, tell me to leave my burdens there. And then take me to the front doors, remind me how we throw them open, Take me to the creaky pews, pews that have held the straightened spines and silent prayers of so many. Take me to church. Move me through the rituals. Tell me why it matters. So that next time, when someone else's world falls apart, I have the muscle memory to share. Amen.